Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, it's me, Justin Robert Young.
Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, ahoy. I'm not late on switching these cameras, you are.
And for our audio listeners, that's all that matters. Like, I feel it. It just doesn't feel right. Something's off.
I was going to say, I don't think we have an official video version anyway.
Doesn't matter. No.
It's fine.
It's the morals, Justin.
Well, at least we're judiciously using our intro time.
So I want to talk a little about AI today, guys.
You,
of all people.
I know.
But this
time
of
year, I'm the only one that AI affects at all in the world.
Located entirely in your office.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really exciting stuff, man. I actually had a great conversation yesterday with all of our friends, John Teasdale, out there in Bali. But he was, you know, Bali attracts a lot of very fit people that are often personal trainers or CrossFit people. And he was being explained to by somebody that, like, yeah, you know, I think I'm pretty much going to retire in like 5 years. I'm going to set up an AI that'll just do all of my consultation for me. And he was like, I would keep your finger on the pulse of this. I don't know if it's going to work out exactly how you think.
Yeah, that's a thing that people kind of forget is when it gets easier for you, it gets easier for everybody.
Everybody.
Well, and it's a bit like that, you know, late 90s. I keep thinking of, you know, the spam revolution where it's like, well, if I make this much money from this 1,000 email list, if I do 100 million, I must be rich. And then very quickly, the world adjusts to your expectation of how things should go.
Yeah, I remember an article years ago reading our local newspaper, you know, in the mid late 90s, about some guy who was trying email to promote his, you know, indie film or whatever. And he was like that hopeful, like, well, if 1% of people decide to read it, and it's like, ha-ha, or buy it, like,
guess what, that percent changes. Like, it's a bit like, yeah, like the Heisenberg principle, where it's like the mere fact of you doing this is ruining this ecosystem and altering the rules.
Yeah. Couple things I thought were kind of interesting, kind of showing the shape of things to come. Before I went to work for OpenAI, I was working on a project called AI Channels, which was basically the idea of using GPT-3 at that point to power like different AI personalities that you could use to like search the web and do stuff. Very, very much a primitive form of what's done much better now with like GPT-4 and these other systems. But, you know, I look back then, I found out how to do like, you know, have it retain the information for long context and stuff. And it was a fun demo. And that's part of how I got hired at OpenAI, was because the strength of showing what you could do with this stuff. And, you know, we live in an age now where, you know, computer chatbots are more than just, you know, something you talk to for fun. You talk to them to get work done, to do interesting stuff. And I saw an article, which I thought was kind of funny because it coincided with another article, which I think are kind of related. And this was from Amanda Silverling at TechCrunch, who talks about, you know, she's using an app called Nomi AI. And what Nomi is basically allows you to like have different AI personalities that you can interact with. And, you know, one of the things I found was really cool.
Is this K-N-O-W, Nomi, or
N-O-M-I?
But they're probably planned on that homonym.
Maybe. Yeah. So like, what I found was fun several years ago was like you could create a conversation where you're the only person in there and you have a bunch of other AIs with different personalities. And I would do roundtable discussions with writers. And it was just fascinating to see what that was, you know, like you were able to get. And this was also using models that weren't like instructified to like tell you they're a chat model all the time. But anyhow, you know, the headline, which was, I have a group chat with three AI friends. Thanks to Nomi AI, they're getting too smart. And just, you know, kind of the tone that we're seeing here is How many times a day do either of you interact with an AI?
Andrew, if the purpose of that question was to deeply affirm my hypochondriac like suspicion that everyone is an AI, that was very effective because I think about it all day, every interaction, like, could this be an AI?
Brian, this is weird things, not therapy things.
Okay. All right. The answer is I think about it a lot. What about you, Justin?
No, I think the question is how much do you interact with it? For me, I was just walking through and talking with Teasdale about this yesterday that, I left lunch with Brian, came back, recorded. The AI transcribes my video. I can edit my video via transcription. Then output it. It transcribes again based on the edited version. I use two custom GPTs nearly every day. One to take gigantic blocks of text and make them more readable and smaller. Another that just generates art based on the transcripts that I output. And then I throw it into Adobe Express, which has AI enabled. It could probably actually make the images for me right in there, but I haven't played around with it. And then use AI to cut out backgrounds of people so I can just, use them cleaner on thumbnail images. So I would say in an average day where I'm not like playing around and trying to find out new things to do, probably, 7 or 8 times of the things that I know for sure are using API or AI APIs.
And that's before we get into the random phone call from a description just reads nonprofit. And then, maybe it's a,
today, Ashley is applying for unemployment because she officially is now no longer working at Twitch. But she was having a hard time with the unemployment website because it's Byzantine and weird. And she's like, I have to categorize what I did in their database, but I can't find the one-for-one thing. And I'm like, well, why don't you just take it to GPT and say, hey, I'm applying on this website. I'm looking for the relevant categories. Here's how I would describe my job. It'll probably pop you out a bunch of stuff that contextually will get you further than you would otherwise.
I was thinking about too, like how many times, like I'm using ChatGPT, I'm using Claude, I'm using these things all the time now. And my workflow, I spent a lot of time coding and I've talked about this before. I'm using an app right now called Cursor, which basically is fascinating because what it does is when you write code and VS Code by Microsoft does this too, but this has gotten to be really good predictive text. So if I say, I want to use a text-to-speech generator, I can just write a little top little comment, say, this is a text-to-speech generator using the DeepGram API, and then it'll start to write the rest of the code for me. And not only just that, I can be like, I want to time this. So I'll start to write like, timer start here, and then it'll suggest the rest of the things. I can say, I have a list of settings, and I can just start a new field. I can start a new part of part of the document and start like, these are the values. Let me create inputs for this. And it'll just fill them all in. It is amazing how fast you can get. I was working on a thing last night where I wanted to train a tiny, tiny little model to just be able to predict something with text. And I said, I went into the chat window and I said, hey, I want to build a model to predict this. This is the folder full of data I have. And it wrote the entire thing. I pasted and clicked and ran and it trained the model. And I had a predictive text model in minutes.
Well, and because this is kind of like the moment of, and again, maybe the three of us are uniquely situated to kind of see it, but when you take on an intern or somebody new or whatever, and they're talented and they pay attention, they are familiar with your work. So essentially they have a large language model of the way Andrew acts or the way Justin acts and so on. And they see you beginning to do a thing and they're like, yeah, you're doing the thing with the thing. And then it's like, they only need to see the beginning of it to know the patterns that come after this.
Well, and that they see that from thousands or tens of thousands of users doing it, and it knows so much. So I'm going to see if I can give you a demo here. But the thing I was thinking about with this was just the fact of how this is going to work when you start to apply it to other things. You know, like what happens when we've seen predictive text in documents, but they're still kind of sort of dumb. But, you know, when you are able to use predictive text across all of your things that you have, your documents, et cetera, then all of a sudden you start to get an amazing. I worked on a thing years ago, which was I basically, you know, had a thing. I just put stuff in a folder, and as I would type, would just predict what I was typing and just super fast paste it in there. And it was, you know, a neat proof of concept, but you see where we are now. And I'll tell you that the what's fascinating to me is that we're at a point where I don't think people appreciate how fast things are getting and how efficient they are. I didn't launch the my AI channels app because the cost was going to be too high for me to just have like a free thing. I didn't want to create like some $30 a month subscription thing or something. I wanted to have a thing that anybody could use because the tokens were too high. Now the cost between OpenAI, Anthropic, and you have a company, there's a company called, it has the same name. It's called Grok, but it's not the Twitter Elon Musk Grok. It's G-R-O-Q. And did I do a demo of Grok for you guys yet?
No, I don't think you have.
No.
Let me show you what's amazing about this. So like this is what's fascinating. What I'm trying to get at here is
I'll tell you what, while you're doing that, we can remind everybody that they can keep this show loud, live, and independent by heading on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. You'll get exclusive access to our After Things segment where we talk about being loud, live, and independent.
I think the thing that I like the most is the loud, live, and independent part.
Well, I can't decide. Loud, the live, or the independence?
Or the independent.
That's the best part, right?
I mean, all my fellow LLIs, let's get LLIs in the chat.
Let's make LLIs a thing.
Yeah, LLIs.
Until LL right. Truthers come for us.
Okay. All right. So we have, this is groq.com. Okay, now what this company did was, they created their own hardware, their own chips, their own stack for serving, for doing inference is what we call it. When you basically serve up, like you have an AI model starts to do your training, and inference is when it makes its predictions and completes your text. So they built their own stack to do this because they thought, hey, we've had some of these, like, you know, former engineers from top companies. Like we think we can make this faster because if we build the hardware based on how large language models work, we can improve it. And you have to remember, large language models are trained on top of GPUs, which were designed for video games.
Yeah.
You know, that's where this came from. And it worked wonderfully well because of the matrix multiplication, the math that goes into there. But they weren't designed for this. We're here. They're like, let's build a system for this. So let's do this thing. Suggest some topics for the weird things. And I'll say that, like, you know, GPT-4 Turbo, Claude, they've all gotten really fast. But this is using what's called it's a 7 billion parameter model. So it's a tiny model. It's not a big model, but it's very useful for a lot of things. Watch this.
Okay. So, wow. That's without even, it doesn't look like it went out to the internet to find out what the Weird Things podcast was. It just, whatever its internal model is, this is the fastest I've ever seen any AI respond.
So the inference time for this was in the total, I'll get a word count. I gave it the query, suggest some topics for the Weird Things podcast. And it came back in 632 milliseconds.
With appropriate names like unexplained phenomena, the mysterious case of the vanishing hikers, bizarre inventions, creepy creatures, paranormal activity, alien encounters, urban legends, all of which are on brand.
Yeah, and that was 142 words in, let's see if we can get it to go fast. I'll use Gemma, which is the new Google open source model. And yeah, we got, that was, how many was that? Gemma did, oops.
So
305 words. That was 305 words in 628 milliseconds.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the significant takeaway here is that because Grok is actually not using computing power that was designed for something else, but instead actually designing their own chips, question mark, or their own
yep.
Yeah, they own the full stack. They've done it from scratch.
Wow. So you're like, okay, Andrew, this is great, but okay. So I keep clicking here. Like I'm getting huge amount, large amounts of text, and you can see the difference between the two models there, though, between that. This is Llama 70B. This is a much bigger model. This would be not quite GPT-3.5 people, but in that neighborhood. And you can see that's slower, but it's still pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yes. Insofar as we just saw 12 complete scripts come out.
Yeah. So let's go.
As a matter of fact, I wonder if does the large language model like include the historical text of what we've said? Like, could you say, please write an entire episode of the Weird Things podcast featuring Andrew Main, Brian Brushwood, and Justin Robert Young?
One, all the systems are limited by about 4,000 character output. They can do huge inputs, but they can't write that much. And a smaller model like this, it'll have a general idea, but like you notice how these, when we tried that before, it'll write, if you say, give me 10,000 words, it'll give you 200. You know, these things still aren't conditioned.
They do get weirdly tired. Like they're like, wait, you understand.
All right. So now you're probably asking, Andrew, this is great, but like, what does this cost? Like this has got to be,
What about the money, fast. Andrew, the money.
Okay. Now, when I first, and I think that's one of the things I want to talk about too, we'll go look at when I wanted to go build, my little AI channels app, the cost per token was, let's go back to GPT-3 token cost. Okay. GPT-3 DaVinci was the original model. That was the first really high quality model. And GPT-3 DaVinci, they were charging back in the day was like, well, then they brought the price down. But sorry, I'm just trying to find the historical price in this because I want to make like an amazing point here. And it was, you measured it in 1,000s of tokens, right? And it was something like, 2 cents per 1,000 tokens, or and I forget the example of that, but I want to show you that how much price has affected these things, and people have been finding.
While you're looking that up, Justin, you paid more attention to this than I have. Tokens are individual like reach outs, like basically like give me a thing or.
This would. Definitely be better answered you screwed up, right?
A token is when they take text and they break it up, and basically, 400 words would maybe be 500 tokens. And so if you look at the text, in here, if you said, sure, here, and I built a tool years ago, which kind of can show you this. So we'll let this spin up. And if we go to here, let me share my tab. So if we take the text to boldly go where no one's gone before, what happens, the way the models work is they take parts of the text, parts of words, and has a tokenizer. So it understands for every word how to either what token value it is or how to split it up into that. So if we take this text and I say, okay, send it to the tokenizer and let it wait while it does it, because I'm spinning up a server I haven't used and I didn't do a wait button. It takes this, that is this text. Okay. Now notice there's almost a one-to-one relationship between the words in the text.
But not entirely. And because it's completely just tokenized, that's the reason the same AI systems are able to work both on words and paragraphs and on visual images and on video.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because what we do here is like, see the word two here? Two is probably 254, right? Yeah. Like that's probably the token for it. And what it learns to do, 2514, what it learns to do is to predict if I see the words two and the words B, probably high probability not. But really what it's predicting is, when it sees 2541, 2514, 10758, what comes next? It might be 88, but it could be 391 20% of the time. And that's how these things basically become very good, as they figure out how to make these predictions by looking at the mirror. And as you said, Brian, images, you just take your image and you convert that into tokens. And then I can say, hey, these are image tokens. These are word tokens. When you see these word tokens next to this image token, it understands, it'll start to associate, you know, the 9246 with cats.
I think, Andrew, that this demonstration right now may have been one of the most elegant explanations of how LLMs and AIs work that I've ever experienced, because like I've understood the words as I've read them, but now I have a mental map of basically an outside viewer, an alien just watching. And it's like, hey, when people say these words, what do the images tend to look like near them?
And that's part of the reason why you'll see when you say like, make a sentence or a picture that does not have a thing. The reason why you keep getting the thing is because where it's looking for connections is with those words that are more present than the not. Not is not well understood. The words are very well understood to relate to other things.
Yeah. So when the GPT-3 first came out, the price was like, you were paying like 6 cents per 1,000 tokens. So roughly 6 cents per 1,000 words is a way to look at it. Okay. That was in 2020. Then what happened? Models got better. People figured out how to make them way more efficient, how to get them to run faster on top of computers. A lot of times what you're paying for in compute is really just renting the hardware and then energy costs. So today, if you want to use, let's say GPT, remember it was 6 cents per 1,000 tokens. Now, this is where you're at with GPT 3.5 Turbo.
Fifty cents
per million tokens.
Good gravy.
Okay.
And this is partly just we have a very competitive market for these APIs, right? And OpenAI has made a decision to try to, you know, this is a really big, crucial getting to know you period for people to get used to this technology. They want to price it competitively, and the rest of the market has done a similar.
It's a bit like getting people to trust getting into strangers' cars in the early days of Uber or something like that, where it's like, hey, just get used to it.
No, these are profit margins. And like, I'm going to show you what Anthropic is doing. Okay. So Anthropic, which was started by some former OpenAI people who had kind of a different approach that they wanted to try. And let's see if I can go find their pricing. So I'll switch there.
While you're looking that up, it is fascinating that the conversation, just, you know, if you're casually viewing at a distance, you know, in your New York Times articles or your Wall Street Journals or whatever, like the headlines have shifted from, you know, are we worried about it taking over the world to, hey, what new methods of inventing energy generation must we come up with in order to feed this beast? It's incredible.
Well, I think there's a lot of really good conversation there. Maine, so what is the price here with Anthropic?
Their GPT-4 competitor, Opus, is I don't know how it compares to Opus. Yeah, Opus is a little more expensive, about 50% more expensive than the GPT-4, but it's capable. But their tiny little model, Haiku, which is fast. And these things, all their models, by the way, can handle images too. You can embed images in them. You know, they're 25 cents, you know, per million tokens.
Damn.
And then what I was going to show you was going to get at the thing where what they're doing, the approach that Grok has taken is, again, I hate the fact they have the same name as, you know, that other thing, but GROQ.
Maybe we could decide that we pronounce it Grokwa.
Grokwa, yeah.
Wait, why? I mean, to quote Michael Bolton, why do I have to change my name? They're the one that sucks.
So here, they're, now again, these models are nowhere near as capable as like GPT-4 or Claude, but they're really fast and used for a lot of things. And that's in speed. So the outputs I was showing you there, that model was 10 cents per million tokens. We went from measuring things in 1,000 tokens to now measuring them in millions of tokens, because trying to show enough decimal points for how something is. And this is only going to accelerate.
Yeah. I would, I would not be shocked if that number goes up. And as soon as it starts to get into fraction of a cent, then you're probably going to have to see things in 2 million or 10 million or 100 million.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen a lot quicker. But I think that the big thing that you're pointing out here, and something that we've talked a lot about, Andrew, is that where we're going as these things are more and more economical is to build products based on a lot of different models that do a lot of different things. And understanding that these cheaper APIs, if you build specific things that they can do well into a product, then you're not relying on one model to do everything. You are parsing out the task and creating some truly spectacular things.
I'll give you another real quick demo. This is Cursor. This is a coding environment, and this is why it's never been easier to learn how to code. So I have a right panel here, which I can choose which different AIs. I can use GPT-4, Cursor, Fast, which is their in-house one, Claude. We'll just use Claude. It's there. I could say write a Python application. Let's do create a training model that predicts word frequency.
And audio listeners, like, this is literally this simple single language sentence that is being written.
So what it does is it says, here's your code, and it shows me what to import. And so it's putting the code into the sidebar here, right? And so it's right. Here's a concise example of how you can create a training model in Python to predict word frequency. And it uses a tokenizer frequency distribution. And it wrote a very simple application, and I put that in there. And now I could go run it. And I could do way more complicated and stuff.
You're able to execute the Python code on this site without...
This is an application. It's a Cursor. It's an development environment. So it's basically, it's like VS Code. It's like, an app that lets you work in code.
So this is on your computer then?
Yeah, it's okay. It's in the computer. So you could say create a server and I'll do some HTML page for the weird things podcast. Okay. And
it's not going to go out to the internet to find out what a weird things is. It already knows what a weird things podcast is.
I can tell it if I go to click this, if I say at web.
Okay. Then that tells it to go out and find out.
Yeah, I think that one's not working. So we'll do this again. Claude has enabled that. So, but anyhow, I'm going to go do this. So basically it's created what's called a Flask app. Okay. So I create that and then I can go here and I can just create my folder called templates. Okay. Inside of there is where you'll put your index file, put my index.html.
So that would be the page that the URL would point to.
Yeah. Yep. Now notice how I copy pasted it before it finished here, but the model's predicting that there's one AI, which is writing the code. Another one inside of here, which is predicting this.
Is figuring out what you're about to do.
Yeah. And so right here I could say, oh, you know what? I realized I can say, hey, use route. The route is where your computer serves things up. So I'll say use 9009. Okay. So I'm telling it to use route 9009. There's no reason other than I'm running a bunch of other stuff here. So I just told it to change this thing. My point is you get a thing like this and you can say hey, I know nothing about code. Can you help me understand how to do this thing?
Yeah.
And then it will start to explain things to you. So, okay, all of a sudden we've done that. I am going to go into my IDE down here. See my terminal, and I'm going to say I'm going to give it the name of the file we just created, and I am going to open up a window here. One second, I got to share that with you. I got to find the other window.
Once you hit a landing point, I would love to know how much this particular software costs and how much the service is on an ongoing basis. Oh, look at that.
Yeah. So there we go. It just generated that in real time. And I could say, I can go into here and I can go to the index and I could say,
let's describe what we just encountered. It's fairly Spartan. It just says Weird Things Podcast and episode one, episode two, three, and three. And then it gives a brief TLDR about our podcast. And it says, subscribe now.
Yeah, and it's formatted though. It's using a library, so it's not like just plain text. But I can go on there and I can make changes. So I behind the scenes, I'm having it right and adding more episodes to the thing. But I could go say, hey, make it black, change the color, whatever, and in real time, just quick put through those updates there. So if I just type here an amazing podcast,
I once heard the. Within the writer's room that on Star Trek, they referred to the interface that the captain has as the yell'em interface, where you just yell at people and tell them what to do. And you wave your hands and you're like, more of this, more of that, or less of that, or whatever. And the goal was always like, you know, how do you ever get to a yell'em interface in a video game? And the closest I had ever seen was, remember on the Oculus, there was Bridge Commander, I believe. You pretty much, everybody, a bunch of humans had jobs, but now like you truly have the yell'em interface where it's like, no, more of this. Some of those, what do we got them? Whatever. I need more. I need less.
And you're going to get to a point where I show this because I think this is an example of where kind of all work is going to go, where I'm going to have the things I need to do. And there's going to be folders or things like this in a chat bot and it keeps track of it. And I'm going to task these things and go into it. And we're trying to kind of wrap our heads around this stuff. And I see this is a productivity tool. Like the amount of stuff that I get done in a very short amount of time now, because of the ability to just, you know, start asking the model to do these things. And as it gets smarter and smarter and very smart people are building these tools, you know, we're going to get into a spot where it's really, really hard, yeah, I think, to even just sort of figure out what it's going to be like in just the next few years. And so let's see, I just did an update to it.
Oh wow, he's already made it.
Give it a dark theme.
He's already written multiple
episodes.
Yeah,
and I can put images there. Yeah. Yeah. But I could go in there and I could add, you know, I could have a pull for an RSS. I could give it an API for an RSS. I'd put it here. It already wrote the, you know, a thing for our fake bio. So if I just insert images there, our images will pop up. It's insane. And if you allow me, I'm going to do another demo because I want to show you something. I think it's I just want to kind of blow your minds.
If yeah.
Cool. Allow me to blow your mind.
If I interrupt, understand it's only because I know most people listen by audio only. And I want to describe what I'm seeing because this is incredible.
Yep. Exactly. Okay. So you had, when OpenAI announced DALL-E was this really cool state-of-the-art model. Cause finally we had, you know, AI that could generate images that actually looked really good. And now what happened is people looked for a lot of ways to improve it. Now, OpenAI continues to build really smart image generation models, meaning if you say, oh, I want to have a baby elephant in one hand and a coin in the other, it can do that. Stable Diffusion, a lot of these other models can do really beautiful images, but they have trouble with complexity. Okay. So I'm going to share, see if I can share this. So what happened is people started to think, what else can they optimize for? Like, what else can you optimize for as far as if you can't make the model like overall super smart, maybe you can improve the image quality. And then the company Stable Diffusion worked with a bunch of independent researchers who are working on something. And they kind of put the name Stable Diffusion on it. So you may have heard of Stable Diffusion as a model. People took that and did their improvements on this. And then the company Byte, you know, a lot of people have been working on stuff. So like researchers at ByteDance took a version of this and they made a thing called SDXL Lightning. So Brian, I'd like you to give me a prompt.
You know what? Three cool, lean, good-looking middle-aged men fighting a tentacled Cthulhu looking beast.
It's gonna be way more skip. This is a little simple, but we could try that.
Okay.
How about three lean middle-aged men?
We'll do three cool men.
Yeah.
Three cool men fighting.
Oh. Fighting one with the beard has Cthulhu. The biggest muscles.
Right. Let's see. So understand, this model is designed for simplicity, but let's let it run.
Okay. Three cool men fighting a Cthulhu is what we have.
Uh-huh.
And then...
No, really.
Holy crap. That looks amazing. Now, again, that's, you know, the man part, obviously stickier than the multiplier,
yeah,
but man and Cthulhu, a cool man and Cthulhu, very, 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 well-defined.
Well, and that's holy crap. So I want you to look at the time.
Yeah, no, it's instantaneous. Okay. It's incredible.
Okay. So this is 1 point. I'm going to have it generate four. So I told it to generate four variations on that. And that actually, the total runtime, that was 4.8 seconds.
Wow. And so we have different art styles, everything from pen and ink to what it looks
like all of them, art. All of them are evocative of either cool men or Cthulhu, right? Like they are all.
Important part.
Yeah, they're all in that world. Like you're not seeing an impressionistic painting. These are all kind of pulp novel or paperback fantasy kind of images.
Yeah, like the first one on top, like I would have bought that book. So the point I'm showing is they figured out how to make, again, this one, you use a bigger model to get the more complex, like the three people fighting, but for just really good, just simple art, it can generate an image in a second. And this exceeds the DALL-E and DALL-E 2 quality, right? Maybe not for some of the complexity, the variable binding certainly is a matter of like degree of like high quality, whatever. In a second, how much does it cost per image generation?
Oh my gosh. We had previously heard numbers as low as 25 cents for a million tokens. I would imagine, I don't know, 50 cents to make a whole image.
50 cents.
Oh, no.
All right, Brian, I'll sell it to you for 50 cents.
Oh no. Oh,
do you know how much money I just made on that, Brian?
49 cents.
I made 49 cents and 49.9 cents, Brian. The time that it takes, it takes 1 second per prediction. And it costs you on this GPU. What I love about this is replicate.com, by the way, I really recommend go play with it. Basically, you run it off their servers there. You can embed it in your own apps. It's a great, great, great place to play with this stuff. But that was 0.00115 cents to generate.
Unless you have one more thing, could we maybe talk just a little bit about like the human rhetoric surrounding this kind of stuff, because it is so good and getting so much better so quickly, as we've watched in real time. We've had a front row seat for all of this. Have you noticed when artists are, let's say, I'm going to say morally, one might say theocratically opposed to AI, have you noticed any phrase that calms them down? Because I know that I've got two artist children.
I was going to say you are all politics are local, and yep. your two daughters are anti AI.
Yeah.
So Andrew, please help Brian talk to his daughters about AI.
What does it mean to be anti-AI?
Well, I believe.
Does it mean I don't like that it exists? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I believe if I were to steel man,
do it in their voice,
the argument, it would be
an impression
that because everything
coward
was based on everything that came before without the permission of any of the artists. Now, you know, if they're dead, then that's one argument, but many of them are living. And so, then that it seems morally unrighteous to them. And I don't know how much of it is based out of, you know, fear for their own careers, or how much of it is a sense of justice, purity, or whatever. But I have yet to crack that. Like, they don't like it when they find out that something was made by an AI, and I don't know how to phrase it that they might be more interested.
Well, I mean, one, it's in a healthy environment, we're going to have people with a lot of different opinions on it. So that's the thing. I remember when I think it was Nick Cave, you know, ripped into like AI generative stuff at OpenAI. We circulated it like, yeah, good. We kind of don't want Nick Cave to be, hey guys, I'm all aboard this. Now we want some people, you know, like, no, I'm going to mix my paints. I'm going to do this. Like we need that mentality to an extent. The idea that it steals is, you know, like my response to that when I would get that on Twitter is I'd say, okay, when is it theft? If I wrote books because I liked Michael Crichton and I liked Stephen King and I wanted to sort of write somewhere in between, and those were influences. Justin and I got into podcasting because we listened to Buzz Out Loud. We ripped off from Tom Merritt and Veronica yep. Belmont and Molly Wood so much. We just stole it, just took it, just stole it. And you have to tell me where the line is. Is the line at the matter of scale? Is it scale that matters? Is it AI? And that's the thing where people, I never get a good answer for. And it's like your point, like to them, it sometimes becomes, well, it didn't earn it. Well, I didn't earn it. And we get into this nebulous sort of thing. And I can't tell somebody they're wrong about that. But I think what you touched upon is a lot of people, I think people who are trying to make their way into the arts are very scared because they feel like there's not going to be a place for them because AI is going to fill it up. And I think that when I know writers who are very anti-AI, and the ones that I know are very anti-AI are people who haven't made it yet. Well, and they feel like.
So let me also add a little candy coat of paint on top of everything that has already been said. There is a wariness to technology, specifically in terms of big companies or companies getting big. With the, you know, we all watched Google go from a scrappy company that all of a sudden was doing a lot of stuff that was really, really helpful for us. Search was extraordinarily helpful. Gmail was extraordinarily helpful. And now we're less fond of Google in many different ways because it has become very, very large. And it is certainly an 800-pound gorilla on the space. And sometimes they do things we don't like. Similar to Facebook, similar to Twitter. These were very popular things that then became less popular as the companies got big. And part of it is your favorite indie band signing to a major label. But now we are at a particularly low point where there are a lot of negative feelings about some of these gigantic Silicon Valley companies. And along comes a new wave of technology that is exciting. And a lot of people like us that have followed tech forever for our entire lives are thrilled about it. But I can understand from a consumer perspective, it's like, oh, great, another Facebook in 3 years. Or an even worse, an even more morally bankrupt version of these companies if you have the particular concepts of a provincialism in terms of training data.
Somebody, all right, so well, somebody in the chat has said AI doesn't make anything new. How do you test for that? How do you define what is new? Those images we saw, if I go for very simple images, they're going to look a lot like a lot of stuff. And I could argue that a lot of the things I'd see on ArtStation back in the day, a lot of things I looked at like human artists did, you go into an art class, you're going to see a lot of bowls of fruit that look very sim. But I can get an AI to come up with an image that just never a composition that never existed before. And so when we say, what does it mean that humans can make new stuff, but AI can't? How do you measure that? And that's where we're running into, you know, I talk to people in AI and they're like, well, I think we're overestimating when we'll get to AGI or whatever. And they may be right, but I'm like, give me a prediction for what you don't think AI will be able to do. Like, give me a task. Not that you'll move the goalpost in the future or decide that it didn't really mean it, but how do you measure what is new or what's different? You know, and people say like, it's funny because we're living, you know, here we are 2024, and some people still think that these AI models, all they do is they're just like, you know, text complete. All they do is just like, you know, look the role of text and give you an answer that existed before. And that really is, these things generalize and create new stuff. The degree that they can generalize and create new stuff is up for debate. How clever can they be? But they do clever things. So,
well, yeah. I mean, and part of it is also You know, it's John Henry and Inky Poo. It's the idea that that a mechanism will erase an element of humanity, and the moral of that story, which is a very sad one, is that the most brawny, athletic person will be erased by this villainous machine that will take away something that is core to our humanity. Now, beyond it being a metaphor that we can then apply to all technology going forward, I don't think that a lot of people are lamenting the concept of industrial machinery in the way
way to steal that story, bro.
I look at that story and I go, man, what a horribly dangerous job. Thank God there's a machine to do this, because this dude died
When you think about other times that people also got brittle, like in the early 90s when sampling culture was overtaking hip hop or whatever, you know, it's like I don't hear a lot of kids angry that sampling culture is a thing, you know, and if we go back farther, there was a time that a lot of piracy was literal piracy, where people were stealing sheet music or ribbons for player pianos or what have you. And I don't hear a lot of argument about that these days.
It is amazing that, you know, that you'll get people, you know, this is theft. And it's like, can I see your BitTorrent folder? You know, there's a high correlation between a lot of people very uptight about this that I'm pretty sure have not been really respectful of copyrights up until now.
I am not going to out anybody in my family.
Show me your Photoshop license. Your Photoshop license.
I am not going to out anybody in my family who is strongly opposed to AI on moral grounds, yet also will not pay for Photoshop because it's too expensive. But hypothetically, I would imagine many of those people exist.
I would say there is a very high correlation between, you know, some of that. I've seen some of the people who are making arguments to me about this. I'm like, wait a second. Gambling Man, AI won't get banned because it figures out how to make cheap ethical nuclear power. It'll get banned for other reasons. Then they won't be able to. But anyhow...
Another thing. This is a fun segment that I dot throughout the show called recapping my conversation with John Teasdale yesterday. But one of the other things was predicting how this is going to be reacted to by different governments. And say what you will about the good old US of A, I think we're probably going to fare a little bit better than, let's say, the EU, which has never met a technology that it does not want to regulate out of existence. And this one is going to be ugly for them.
Did you see the new act they passed?
Nope.
From the people that made web browsing the most annoying thing in the world. You know,
from the hit makers who brought you the Right to Be Forgotten Act. We now see.
Yeah, they are putting forth the major acts for regulation. The EU's like, it's just... And they're like, it's just my friends in tech there are just frustrated because they're worried now they're going to lose. They're going to lose out to the rest of the world because you could go to UK. UK is not part of the EU. So like, you know, OpenAI has offices in the UK. You go to other places to develop, but people, big major AI companies like, well, we don't really know if we want to do development there because these, you know, the regulations are put in place are created by bureaucrats who think that they're doing the thing. The same people that gave us the prevalent cookie browsing thing and made things worse.
GDPR.
They're going to handicap, you know, AI development in Europe. And there's Mistral is a really great company, a French company that built the Mistral model, which is super capable. Like there are brilliant people in Europe working in AI. And right now, a lot of them are looking to, how do I go somewhere else, you know, because of what just got passed.
You want a government that isn't all up in the regulations, all up in the stifling laws. Come to the old U.S.
And
there's a great place in downtown Des Moines that you'll just really light on fire.
I think that, you know, if countries have a right and groups to have a right to choose their own destiny, and that having some people who take more of what they perceive to be a consumer focus is fine.
Yep.
You know, I you know, it's not a boo them. Yeah, a little bit, but it is. man, you guys really went far.
I am a well storied hater of EU regulations. I've been making fun of it on the various Tom Merritt shows for damn near a decade at this point. So I am planting my flag in this is going to be an absolute economic disaster.
Congrats, EU. You guys won GSM versus our cellular standards, but I ain't seen a hit since.
Yeah. So I want to change topics here. This relates to it. Brian, I didn't know that you were an app developer.
Oh, no. Did I develop an app?
I read this thing and I'm like, this sounds like something right out of Brian's head, because I'm sure we had a conversation about this. Brian, have you heard about Palmsy?
No.
Let me read to you for the text for Palmsy from the App Store. Welcome to Palmsy. Palmsy lets you make little posts for yourself. Then it sends you some push notifications from random pals from your contacts. It's all just for fun. Nothing ever leaves your device. Your privacy is important. So what it does is you can make posts and it'll make like pretend notifications from your friends. Like, great, cool. I really dig it. So that way, if you say something stupid or something you regret or you wish you didn't do, No worries.
I believe what you're remembering is when I stumbled across Botnet, which was just a naked, it's now long gone from the App Store, but it would essentially provide all of the dopamine and none of the risk. And it seems like this is following in the footsteps of it.
Yeah. So I thought, like, I was thinking about, yeah, like, you could get to the point, though, where, man, it might be good to, like, yeah, let me have pseudo Twitter to predict the outcome of this post, you know, go like, oh, geez, I shouldn't have posted that. And I thought from here, like, underneath there, I'm like, yeah, there's actually a really good idea, which is let me figure out what the pseudo reaction would be before I get the real reaction, and then I'll think twice about it.
I'll tell you, I mean, I have long said, boy, do I hope that there is an operating layer, an AI powered operating layer between me and all my social media. I want to just tell it the things that I want to do and not only have it post to all the things individually, so I don't have to go one by one by one. But boy, would I love it to just bring me the reaction. And then
focus groups.
Just bring me the compliments. Like I don't really need to see everybody's opinion, or like if I'm feeling a little like I need to be challenged, bring me the most oppositional viewpoint to what I just posted. And then it'll say, nothing, sir. Everyone thought it was brilliant. And I'll say, good job. You get a raise.
I like virtual Brian better than real Brian. That, you know, their friend will tell you that, like, you're virtual version is way better than you.
I'll tell you what, man, there is something to the changing generations of like building up a lot of scar tissue, a lot, you know, the way you get strong is by, you know, breaking down your muscles and, you know, and then having them rebuild. But it's like socially, it's really interesting because I just don't know where to find the opportunity for my kids to have that rough and tumble experience. I take that back. Actually, tomorrow, my daughter is going to be in a battle of the bands and she may not win, and that will be disappointing for her, but man, that rough and tumble pushback is
especially so when Huey important. Lewis is the one telling you he didn't make it. Yeah. You know,
you're too loud.
So close. Almost got to see his last concert.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think that there's probably fresh hell that we just have no cultural connection to. I can't imagine that every conversation that you have on Discord is something that doesn't turn into, you know, a violent firefight where people are defending very dumb things to the death.
Yeah.
One more thought too, and this is kind of an opening the door for this, is I went to an event night before. It was an OpenAI event. And then I was talking to somebody there and they showed me they're using Suno, you know, the music system, like, mm-hmm. exclusively now. They said it's replaced Spotify for them.
Really?
Wow. And I'm hearing that more from people because how weird is Andrew? You're about to hear, everybody. Just if you thought I was weird, I'm going to make it weirder. I really like the band Tangerine Dream. which, you know, like, you know, very old school electronica stuff. But I really like Tangerine Dream in the middle of the 1970s when they're first playing this stuff. Later on, not so much. When it got into the woodwinds and the wind chimes, all the no. So there's a period there, like Jean-Michel Jarre. There's like a period of like, man, there's some really great stuff from here, like some Wendy Carlos stuff, like really good mid-70s sort of prog, you know, rock kind of stuff coming out of there. Some of those people are not making music anymore. Some of those people are dead. And man, I would love more music from that period. Now, I could go through their discography up through the decades, not as fun for me. But with technology like Suno and other stuff like that, there's like now stable audio. Like, man, like, yeah, I could just pretend the 70s never ended.
It can never end. And it's being made right now. Fresh to order.
Yeah. I name drop here, but I won't name drop. Working at Open Out, you got to talk to like a lot of really like amazing artists, like, you know, very talented people, you know, and talking to a very famous songwriter, a really super famous guy. It's like very, very famous. Like if I told you, talking about AI, and this person who's got a big catalog is super excited about AI because they look at the idea of training the systems on their own stuff and choosing the great stuff and basically just being able to create, you know, a release every day or whatever. And that's the way they look at it, is like, yeah, I've created a big history of music. And now if I go in there, I think I have a better sense than probably the AI will about what'll be great or not, which maybe he's right, but at least he's making a choice. And I see that we're going to see that some people we look up to, they might all of a sudden go great, you know, Spotify might do the version of Suno, and it might be you're going to get a station by that artist that is their AI station, and maybe they approve all the songs that go on there.
I mean,
you know, something like that. Who knows?
They're in the world of rap music. There was a big controversial moment where a rapper, Kendrick Lamar, dissed two people that he was previously friendly with, Drake and J. Cole, and immediately there was AI versions on Reddit, yep, of the diss track that either J. Cole or Drake would write back to Kendrick Lamar. And gotta say, pretty good. It was really fast, yep, and they weren't terrible. I mean, diss tracks are never the greatest lyrically ever. And so it was a soft target for an AI replication to be really good. Last night, J. Cole came out with his actual diss track back to Kendrick Lamar. Wasn't that good? It was like the biggest deal. The biggest reaction was it kind of sucked. And so it's like, I don't know, man. Like there's Brian and I found on a great night this week, there's a TikTok account that has a context. We should probably not play it here because
I agree.
Family friendly.
I agree.
But the context of it is, here are obscure vinyls from the past. And when you play them, you find out pretty quick, especially if you're familiar. There's some telltale elements of AI music that are very, very clear, but they are absolutely filthy, scatological, like, but very, very funny songs in the like a country novelty song version or a power ballad version or a Huey Lewis version. But if you put the context around it, the fact that it just keeps coming out every day on TikTok is like, great. It turns out it's just the thing that you want at the moment that you want it. And that's the surface area that this kind of compute allows.
And I am certain that the novelty will fade. But is it novel
right
now?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, sure, the novelty of all art fades.
Yes.
Right? And I do think that certainly, anything made very, very cheaply will, look chintzy next to something that took a billion years to make. But it doesn't mean that a kid's favorite toy won't just be the thing that they got from McDonald's that came for free in the Happy Meal.
Yeah.
Like that might just be the thing that was there at the moment when there was the bonding to it. I would not be shocked that people's favorite songs were AI songs.
In the chat, Weird Danny says, I think it would get boring if there were infinite new songs on demand.
I mean, what world do you think we're living in now, Doc?
Spoiler, like if you listen to a new song every minute of the expected lifetime of every human, you would never get close. We already have infinite songs. And so instead, go ahead.
Well, I mean, to their point would be like, if it was like, if I just said, oh, I'm just going to have, you know, infinite, there is a thing to be said about like, this is the album that came out. Then I think there, I would say there's two kinds of listening to like, another thing. I love to listen to ambient music.
Yeah.
Boy, do I hate the sound of running water. Boy, do I hate that in rainfalls, because I feel like I have to get up and go pee every time I hear it.
And, I don't know if anybody can find it, but I think we all three of us experienced it. But there was an album called "What If the Beatles Never Broke Up," and essentially they took all of this was, you know, manually done by a mashup artist. They took all the solo albums of the Beatles and made mashups that. That was a pretty good simulacrum of what if they just kept on going. And I dearly loved it. I don't know that you can find it now, but it seems to me like that's very similar to what we have in AI right now.
Yeah. Amazing times, but I mean, it's a very good point, you know, and I think that we're going to have events and then we're going to have just everything else. You know, there will be event stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there is something to be said that humans want a certain cadence for music delivery. A lot of people still pine for the era where albums were taken a lot more seriously and we were not as single driven, right? Like we are a very single driven pop culture right now. We were a very single driven pop culture in the 1950s and 60s. And then all of a sudden albums became the thing for a couple decades. So I do think that kind of switches back and forth, but like, you know, would somebody rather have a new Elvis song every week in the 1950s or every day? I don't know. Probably. They probably would, you know? Now, does that burn Elvis out faster? We'll find out. This is what the ability will allow.
Weird Dammy says, the good thing is all AI and art AI art and music will be the only will only be electronic, so it'll disappear first when the fall comes.
What do you know?
You need a date.
What do you
tell
know?
Us what you know. But I'm going to refer you to a title from a headline from The Verge from 1 week ago. Vinyl records outsell CDs for the second year running. So we keep that. It's not going to be far long before Suno AI, they may have a thing. Take your 10 favorite songs, collect press, print, and next thing you know, you get an album delivered to your door.
Yeah, they've got a legal road of trials ahead of them, but certainly the tech is there, and somebody's going to do it.
And there is something special about the vinyl experience. I can't put my finger on it. I don't understand it, but I'm being seduced by it. It's the fact that you know it's you know sound Drop is touch at a distance. You know, but picks.
Picks anybody?
Yeah, I got a pick. First. Hey, there's a show on Max. It's an HBO program called The Regime. I don't know the team behind it, but it stars Kate Winslet as the legacy chancellor, a supreme leader of a small European country. That is very much it's in modern day. So they are in between the sphere of influence of America and China. That's not really, that's the background of it. The reality is watching a small country essentially fall into chaos because their supreme leader is kind of crazy and begins to have more and more of a relationship with a very complicated ex-soldier who is you know a little wacky himself, and so it's really 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 good thus far. I think there's only one more episode to go. I don't know the entire run, but it's been great. If you like political intrigue with a sense of humor and very much a dark comedy at times, then I would say go get yourself some Regime.
Is there anybody in my family that I should invite on this ride?
I don't know. It's a little heady. I think like for people to get it, you'd have to be somebody that has followed the like fall of governments before. Like, but I don't think that it's totally inaccessible. Like, you get the fact that she's a kook and
right.
That she's a megalomaniac, off. But there are definitely a lot of, you know, for example, her father, who was the chancellor, they were briefly overtaken by a socialist and then she was returned to power. Her father is kept in state on the grounds and she will go talk to him periodically. And every once in a while inside of her own head, he will talk back to her. But that's the level that we are looking at.
I'll keep my pick short. I was worried about whether or not the Naked Gun holds up. It does. And in the meta,
beloved cast.
It turns out
top to bottom, beloved cast.
turns out that when you know what the future holds for O.J. Simpson, watching him get tortured the entire movie, even funnier. <It's>,
Gifted physical comedian. Gifted physical comedian.
I told you the story that if you do the LA walking tour, downtown LA, where like they show you all like the haunted tour, like with the Cecil Hotel and like just all the dark, horrible things that happened. One of the places they take you to is you go to the street and they point and there's this big knife store, knife shop
no.
that sells all these different knives. And they say, you know, like 3 weeks before Nicole Brown Simpson was murdered,
no.
O.J. Simpson was shooting the movie SEAL Team here and bought a knife there.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Like, that's where it happened, you know? And like, they know because he left the set to go over there and buy a big ass knife.
Wow.
I got a couple picks. One is, go to Suno.ai and try it. I mean, they're over capacity right now, but they let you create, check out the music, check that out. I think that we're having kind of our ChatGPT DALL-E moment where we're seeing a really good enough form of things that people are very happy with. And I think that it's worth following and seeing where the state of this is. Cursor.ai, I believe that's the name of the company. If you have any interest in learning how to code, no, it's cursor.sh, which you can go there and take a look at that. It's really, really, really great. Really, really good. I resisted for a long time and then I dive in and I'm like, man, nothing ever, not going back.
Okay. Right on.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.